This episode of The Review was first broadcast on the 29th of December 2012.
Hello and welcome to this very special edition of The Review, your weekly preview and review of the arts here on Monocle 24, coming to you live from St. Moritz in the heart of the Swiss Alps.
Coming up on today's programme, we sit down with local architect Andy Kuchel to find out about the Alpine landscape that inspires his work.
And we'll explore the current climate of the German art world. Monica and Philomena of Berlin's Spruth Magers Galleries will join us.
And we'll keep our eye on the local Engadine art scene with the managing director of the St. Moritz Art Masters, Evelyn Vassar-Tester.
All that plus emerging Romance singing talent Rezia Peer will join us to reflect on the growing popularity of Switzerland's fourth language in the music scene.
So lots to look forward to this week on The Review, here on Monocle 24, live from St. Moritz.
And good afternoon from a, I think probably the nippiest day we've had yet here in St. Moritz.
Very bright and beautiful, though.
Yes, very bright and beautiful, and we have a rather sort of action-packed show today. Very much in the spirit, of course, of The Review, and for those who are just joining us today, we've been here on the trot pretty much all week. Well, at least since we started, kicked off in the evening of the 26th, and we will, of course, be here right through till, well, New Year's Day.
I have to say, we were very glad to have our new addition, Marcus Hippie,
yes, and
joined
you,
us.
Yes, and you probably heard that Georgina Godwin said that Marcus Hippie would be here. There are two empty seats around our table here in St. Moritz. But Mark, we've dispatched Marcus Hippie. He's gone over to the Cresta Run, and he's going to be doing a bit of bobsledding today.
He's actually quite fearless. I don't know if he knew what he'd signed up to until we started talking about speed.
Yeah.
And it really, he's going to be going down that bobsleigh, and I can just imagine the expression on his face. In fact, he's trotting off now.
Yes, there he goes. we'll have, I think, all of the audio evidence of that sometime on probably our program on Monday. I think it'll make very sort of fine New Year's Eve listening. I think before we crack in, have a little scan of the headlines and the weekend papers. You've got the weekend FT there, Sophie.
Very interesting story on the front page here about China and the internet grip. China has tightened its internet controls over 500 million web users, and they now must disclose their identities, their true identities, to their web users. So it's going to have huge implications for press freedom in China.
Yeah, well, and as if it could get any worse.
Exactly.
I thought, just looking at the International Herald Tribune, they're leading on a step north and just clear of the tax man's reach. And it's just a story about this ongoing story, really sort of the poster child of a flight from taxes, has really become Gerard Depardieu. He said he's vowed to renounce his French citizenship over higher taxes. Who wants to lay claim to him? Will he become Belgian? Will he become Swiss?
He's really the whipping boy in France at the moment.
But I have to say, not the most attractive picture of Mr. Depardieu on the front cover of the paper.
He's rather
this
lost
morning.
His look, sadly. One final quite quirky little story on the front of the FT. There's a redhead convention in Crosshaven, which is a village in Ireland. And redheads from all around the diaspora, the Irish diaspora, are gathering together today to celebrate what they have in common.
This is happening where?
In Ireland.
In Ireland, appropriately enough. A couple more stories out of the Herald Tribune this morning. It says Pearson buys stake in Nooks as the British publisher of textbooks said Friday that it was paying $89.5 million in cash for a 5% stake in Nook Media, which of course is the digital operations of Barnes & Noble. Also, quite interesting story here, rather opposite as well to where we're seated right now, where I believe it's probably just hovering about... We're about minus one here in St. Moritz Celsius. Hot as Hades is the headline. It's official. It says Death Valley replaces a corner of Libya as the most scorching spot on Earth.
Hard to imagine when we're like bundled up in blankets here in St. Moritz, but
I would much rather be broadcasting from the cold, though, than
absolutely
than the blistering heat. Just very quickly, the Swiss papers today. Interesting story, on the front cover of the Neue Zürcher Zeitung, the NZZ, their lead story, Nexus Yacht in Palestine. So it's a piece by Martin Voker, really talking about the prospects for Palestine and what happens next year. And then just an interesting side column story on the right side of the paper, Imo Immobilien Boom ohne Ende, the real estate boom without end, and really looks at the big players in the European market, etc. Speaking of the NZZ, I thought this is a really handsome little supplement which I picked up, which is the Neue Zürcher Zeitung's Focus. So they do this occasional, it's a supplement, but it doesn't come with the paper. In fact, it has a rather high cover price, 18 Swiss francs. And this is their piece on the BRIC nations. But it just looks like this wonderful briefing that it has sort of a very sort of 1950s school feel to it.
Almost the feel of a periodical, in fact.
Absolutely.
Very handsome.
And anything else that you've spied?
One thing's got my eye. Bradley Wiggins, the great British cyclist, has been knighted, controversially.
Yes, exactly. There is all of the, of course, you know, the Queen's List, went out, and many of the athletes have done incredibly well.
He's waving away. He's something of a wide boy. I think people were expecting him. He might actually refuse the invitation, but he seems to have grasped it with open hands, and he's on the front page of the FT weekend.
And some proper mutton chop sideburns as well. Anyway, lots coming up. It is just coming up to 11 minutes past the hour, 11 minutes after 1300 here in St. Moritz. It is just 11 minutes after 7 a.m. on the North American East Coast. You're listening to The Review. We're live in St. Moritz, and we'll be back to talk Alpine architecture in just a moment.
London, New York, Tokyo. This is Monocle 24.
London, New York, Tokyo. Tu vai Monocle 24.
Londres, Nova York, Tokyo.
London, New York, Tokyo. Dette Monaco 24.
Londonist, New Yorkist, Tokyost, se on Monocle 24.
London, New York, Tokyo, Monocle 24 des.
Londino, New York, Tokyo.
This is Monocle 24.
And this is The Review. We're live in St. Moritz. And today we're putting the feelers out in the creative community of the Engadine and beyond. We start by meeting Arndt, or I guess as we know him locally, Andy Kuchel, local architect and head of the St. Moritz and Zurich practice, Kuchel Architects, to talk enduring design in this most wonderful of alpine landscapes. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hello, Tyler. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Very well, with this fantastic day.
Yeah, it absolutely. We didn't really sort of paint a picture of the day, but it's said just hovering around zero, but gloriously. Well, actually, a little hazy. It's not quite as a crystal sky as it was yesterday. Over the past few days, Andy, we've been talking about really the built environment, and you've played such really a pivotal role. Perhaps one of the most newest and most identifiable pieces is this cantilevered footbridge, which juts out over the lake, which is, of course, is part of not just the parking structure, but it also acts as something which really connects village to the lake, to the footpath, etc. What is your view in terms of the state of St. Moritz right now? Because if I sort of actually wrote in the Financial Times today, this has to be perhaps one of the most wonderful places for an architect to work, because I said it's like a big children's train set. It's like it reminds you of your Boyd. You can move all the pieces around the square in quite an easy sense. So, from your point of view, is it a luxury to work in this type of environment, or is it sometimes also limiting too?
I would say I'm very gifted to be able to work here because we have fantastic environment and fantastic inspirations. You know, you get every day new things coming to you, and you have very nice clients which let you experience new design, new things, and new materials, and a lot of things you couldn't do in other cities, you know. Therefore, we are very gifted to have the base here and then work from here all over the world and then try things out. And you have the big chance to be able to meet people, other architects, which you wouldn't meet like in London on the street.
Mm. Sophie and I, we were interviewing Hans-Jörg Ruch the other day, talking about his work, of course, in the region. And we posed one question to him about maybe some of the mistakes that have been made here as well. Do you feel that this is a town which is in a bit of an architectural transition? Because a couple of years ago, I called it Shang Moritz because there were so many cranes a few years ago. I mean, it really did look like Shanghai. It's calmed down a little bit now, but it seems there's another wave of construction. There's a lot more residential work coming up. So do you think we're entering sort of a second phase of a building boom here?
No, we won't have a second phase of building boom already to the new law we have got, but we will enter to a new phase of more quality buildings, much more quality and less quantity.
And Andy, I wanted to talk to you about a project that we actually discussed earlier in the week. Rolf Sachs is on the show and we talked about his stunning house, and which I understand you worked on. It's a really intriguing building because it was part of the 1928 and 1948 Olympics. Tell us about that project and some of the obstacles you had to overcome to get that off the ground even.
This was one of my longest lasting projects. I think it took us 10 years till we got Rolf in there. facing all problems of historic monuments, of preserving the building, what kind of function giving it to it, should it be public, should it be private. And luckily we could convince everybody that it's better to have a private house in there and have the whole structure preserved from the outside for St. Moritz and have new life in there instead of having it like a ruin there for the last 80 years.
And it was actually part of the changing room structure of the Olympics and really sort of part of the kind of infrastructure of that amazing sporting event. What were the challenges of converting that into a domestic dwelling?
I mean, the thing is, it was a very poor structure, you know. It was just there to hold the tribunes and hold the changing rooms, like you said before. And the good thing was there was not so much structure in there, so we could be really free of doing what we did. And it was great fun to work with Rolf on this project to get a very nice private house out of it. But having preserved from outside the look like it looked always and like it looked 80 years ago.
Mm. And you mentioned that there's going to be more focus up here on really a quality built in environment. And is that really sort of the mission of the Gemeinde? They've realized that, maintain the status of St. Moritz and the region, that it really has to be about working with the best architects and also the best quality?
I don't know if it's the mission of the commune, but it's the mission of us architects. And I think we are all feel now we want more quality and we want better buildings and better architecture. And I have to say all my colleagues, they feel the same. And I'm very happy that this movement now took place.
Mm. When you look around, though, and of course, I'm sure every sort of architect has dreams about taking the wrecking ball to some things, and of course, also things that they would like to build as well. If you sort of survey around St. Moritz and the region, any things that you think need to go, and any dream projects that you would really sort of you look around and say, I would absolutely love to work on that.
My dream project is on at the moment. I can't tell you a lot about it, but it's about it's about an underground hotel. And I think this is what we should do much more. We should much more work with the surroundings, much more hide things we don't have to see, and really get underground and earth architecture up here in the mountains.
So despite the fact that you're keeping this a secret, this project is happening though.
I hope it will happen, yeah, because it would be a statement. It would be not a statement as a statement, but it would show people what you could do in the Alps without destructing the Alps.
Well, this is sort of a bit of a Swiss tradition, though. I mean, I think anyone listening would know that the Swiss have long been good at making tunnels and making bunkers and preparing for Armageddon here. So it's almost sort of back to the future.
Exactly. We just copy the old tradition.
I wonder, we talked in the opening about the Alpine landscape and how that inspires this vernacular architecture that we see around is very much part of the landscape. Do you think that there is a sort of a modern sort of vernacular that you think you're moving towards in terms of a modern style even?
I hope it won't be a modern vernacular, but I hope it will be a modern new architecture, how to interpretate architecture here in the Alps, like we did with Norman Foster with the Chiesa Futura, which is a completely different structure, a different thing, but with old tradition materials.
One thing which has also been a bit of a reoccurring theme is how one maintains life up here. At a time when, of course, cities become more attractive. If you're a young person in the Engadine, you want to end up somewhere else for a while. You may not want to ever come back to the mountains. So, how do you, as an architect, do you feel that you also play a role as well in making this community work and making sure that there is a fabric where it's not just for the super rich, but there's also places for local workers, and there's also places for families who've been here for generations as well. Do you think that there's still some measures that need to be taken to perhaps weave together a tighter community, and can architecture play a role in that, do you think?
Absolutely. I think we have to go on with urbanization. We have to get a bit more infrastructure up here for all the young people to get this working. And an architect can really, in planning, and this is what we should do, plan the towns that they work better and that they work all year round.
Excellent.
But still now, there are a lot of people which come back and young people which want to live up here.
Well, Andy Kuchel, many thanks for coming in today on Monocle 24.
And we're going to be back in just a moment to talk art and galleries with Monica Smith and Philomena Mogers right here on The Review on Monocle 24.
Whether you're looking for gift ideas, clothing, or something for the home, we can help. Monocle has a selection of beautifully appointed shops in New York, London, Tokyo, Hong Kong, and our latest edition in College Street, Toronto. Scarves by Drake, wallets by Ettinger, and wine cups by Hakkisan are just a small selection of Monocle's collaborations with designers from around the world. Plus, if you've got any gaps in your collection of Monocle back issues, well, we can help with that too. So do pop in and say hello at any of our Monocle shops.
Home to almost every alpine cliché you can imagine, Switzerland's remote Lower Engadine has its own brand of old-fashioned charm. Monocle's film crew put on their snow boots to capture a world lost in time.
In earlier times, there was a clear hierarchy in the village. First of all came the priest, then the teacher, then the blacksmith. The one who controlled the fire, actually the master of the fire, that was then, in the belief of the people, a bit a higher person.
Mountain magic on monocle.com.
Welcome back to this very special edition of The Review, live from Samaritz, here in the heart of the Swiss Alps. And we're joined now by two very special guests, Monica Spruth and Philomena Mogers of the Berlin and London-based Spruth Mogers Galleries.
Monica and Philomena opened their first gallery in Cologne in 1983. For over a quarter of a century, Monica Spruth and Philomena Mogers have been at the forefront of developments in contemporary art from their base in Germany, developing the most innovative artists in a range of practices. Spruth Mogers showcases new work by some of the world's most influential artists, as well as supporting younger creative talent on the rise as well. Monica and Philomena, welcome. Very nice to see you, all bundled up on the far side of the table there. We're very, very lucky. One of the great things about doing this program up here is that as much as we've been able to talk to wonderful local talent like Andy Kuchel, the great thing is lots of people, of course, vacation and take their time up here. I wanted to start with you. It's also quite interesting because it almost seems that we've been at some parties together over the years. It also seems that some of your artists that you represent travel in a bit of a caravan with you. They sort of seem to be around you as well.
Yeah, but this has come really natural. I think we all kind of are having our history with being up here. I've been here since I've been a child. My husband learned swimming here. And somehow, I don't know, we all wound up here, most of us with our families at some point. And same with our artists, right?
Yes. As you know, Peter Fischli lives part of the time here. His wife is from the Engadine, so they all have, as well as we have, long histories. They come here Andreas Gursky comes here, Thomas Dehmann comes here, Fischli Weiss, who else? Oh, many of them.
Yeah.
What do you think, Monica, what do you think it is, Monica, that, you know, again, this has come up over the past few days when we've talked to, you know, people in the arts community. Why are artists from around the world drawn to the Engadine, do you think? I mean, is it the sense of existing community? Is it infrastructure? I mean, from your mind, what is
it? No, I mean, there's one really basic, easy thing. It's one of the most beautiful valleys in the Alps, which exist. So it's just very beautiful. And some are very sportive. And, you know, it's also, apart from that, it developed also some kind of little, let's say, intellectual discourse also here in this area, because, you know, I mean, it's not only the artists, there are some great architects coming here regularly, and so, I mean, and our friend Hans Ulrich Obrist is coming here, and he's gathering a lot of people and a lot of discourses here, so this is how it happens.
No, and I think it's been like that historically. Because if you look at who the Giacometti family has been bringing up to Stampa, I mean, I think at least when I was a child, there was always the rumor that you could still find in the little river that runs through Stampa, that you could find pieces of stone that had been that Max Ernst had been painting on, and. Yeah, I mean, Segantini was up here, was married to Beecher, not married, but he's living, was living with Beecher Bugatti. Max Ernst, the surrealist, all came up here to be with the Giacomettis, and I think it's been a nurturing, aesthetically nurturing place for artists, and a place where people are always coming through, going from the Northern Alps to the Southern Alps.
Now this is the review, so it seems like a good time at the end of the year to look back on 2012 and look at the art scene. We've seen some sort of tectonic shifts, especially in London. I wondered, could you give your view as gallerists from, you know, 2012 in the art world?
You mean in terms of more and more galleries coming
exactly,
to London?
Yeah.
And I think also just the shifting landscape, I mean, how you see it, because I think your name is so recognizable internationally and part of the establishment. And, you know, one thing Sophie and I were talking about, you know, not just changes in London, but London leading in so many ways as well. So how has 2012 looked? Or Monica, do you want to jump in?
Yeah, you know, you probably refer to all these American galleries coming to London. We've been there quite a while, but, I mean, for us, it's a little different. For us, the important part is what are we doing, what is our attitude towards the art, and therefore we are not that impressed with all these American colleagues coming over there. For us, it's really more important, you know, what changed in the art world and how can we keep up with the idea which originally brought us into this field? How can we really try to focus on what art really, what is the importance in our society of art? So, and that's how we focus on our shows and the choice of our artists. So we are less looking at the market, but when you really show important artists, then of course, you know, there is a market. But we are not looking at London because it's the center of the art.
No, but I think strictly technically, the reason why London has gotten so important, and I think when we first went to London, we were already kind of we knew about that. That was the reason why we went there. Is that obviously? I mean, New York is still quite the center of the art scene, but with the globalized art market. London was obviously going to become a hotspot in terms of the Far East, and the you know, I mean, all these people are coming to London all the time, coming to London more than they're actually coming to New York. They're also going to New York, but suddenly it got obvious that there would be room for more art centers in the world. And it's quite interesting what's happening there at the moment.
I wanted to go back to Berlin for a moment, where you make part of your base anyway. And when you look at Berlin right now, do you think that this is really sort of the pairing in Europe at the moment? Berlin, because of low costs in the city, it's amazing to see just the flight of young Europeans. I mean, even international talent going there right now. So this is really, you know, and continues to be the base, the cauldron where things sort of bubble up. But you do your marketing out of London.
That's what we were actually thinking when we first opened London. And when we moved to Berlin, the whole idea was that the entire part of, which is very big part of our gallery, the people taking care of the artist, artist assistants, etc., so to speak, the whole kind of intellectual work being done at the gallery would be done out of Berlin, and then all the financial part would be done out of London. And to our surprise, Berlin also is not as good as New York or not as good as London, but is actually a marketplace. And we basically started having that problem at some point that the salespeople in London, we had the problem that people in Berlin had to work more to fulfill all their duties, and we had to make
those
adjustments.
Those are German labor laws as well, though.
and we had to bring over more artist bureaucracy over to London to even that out. So surprisingly, Berlin is not as lame as everybody thinks it is.
I wondered, Tyler mentioned that you sort of travel with almost a kind of caravan of your artists, and your relationship with them, it runs very deep. I wondered, how do you nurture the new talent and make sure that you're finding the next generation of you know, Kenneth Anger, or, you know, the people that are really synonymous with Spookmurders?
You mean the younger artists? You see, we have been always, traditionally, some 30 years ago, we have been very close to the discourse, the art discourse. And it's out of that discourse that, you find the young artists where there is some kind of interesting aspect, and then
it's just happening. It's also because it's
usually, but out of the, you know, also of the whole community we're living in, the artists. So it's in the degenerated art world, you know, makes it, you have to really focus, and you have to constantly think what is really the important aspect, and this is how it happens. And then we do group shows, we find out where is really, you know, also aesthetically, it's not only a question of idea, it's a question who is the artist who can bring it in the right form. And then we slowly
And then it's also, I think, an important point is that the young artists, there are young artists who really would like to work with us because they like the other, they relate to the other artists we're showing. And then there are young artists that some older artists that we're showing are relating to. And of course, you have a closer look at, you know, other people that you really trust tell you to have an eye on. And then, so somehow, I don't know, we've been quite lucky in the last 2 years with the people been adding on, like Cyprien Gaillard, yeah, Alexandre Singh, or, well, Theodore Dratze.
But it's a question that the idea of our gallery is a little different from others. Mm. We have been always, from the beginning on, we've been part of a discourse in the art scene. So it's the idea, it's the attitude which we have, which attracts younger artists, and the ones who are attracted by this idea, we are attracted by. So, and then slowly develops. So,
I suppose my question really was, how much intervention is there from you as sort of mentors and sort of developing the careers of these people?
Well, yeah, there is a very close discourse, and you know, we're trying to provide a very, very close net, you know, with the assistants that are partly working at the gallery and trying to be in close contact with the artists conceiving, you know, but every artist is different. Some of them, you know, want a lot of advice, and the other ones just want to be left alone and eventually for you to be there when they need to ask you something.
Finally, just before we go, we're almost...
Of course,
sorry.
In this confused art world, you know, it is much more important today that they, you know, that they have somebody they can lead on and can be guided by. I mean, this is true, especially the young artists, you know, because it's a very dangerous world they are in, and they can be misleaded very easily.
Monica and Philomena, just before we go, as we're New Year's Eve is almost upon us, looking across to 2013, major shows you're going to break, etc., what's coming up over the next 6 to 12 months?
A lot of things.
Two shows I have in mind. One is Fischli Weiss again. It's the project which they did at the Architecture Biennial. And then we are adding an older, very interesting artist in the second part of that year.
Very stable.
Is Reinhard Mucher, if you know him, which is very interesting. And then,
well, there's a lot of really great group shows. Very great museum shows, like the PS1 MoMA show that Cyprian Gaya is opening on the 20th of January, and then the Rosemary Truckle show coming up at the Serpentine. We're having wonderful painting show coming up by George Kondo at the gallery in Berlin. Lots and lots of good things.
And then there's the Venice Biennial. Maybe there's one or the other surprise there as well.
Excellent. Okay, well, lots to look forward to. And thank you very much for coming to join us today.
My pleasure.
Monica Schroed and Philomena Magers, thank you very much.
You're listening to The Review live on Monocle 24. We'll be back with more from the art world in just a moment. This time we refocus our attention back onto the Engadine and meet the brains behind St. Moritz Art Masters.
Before you set off on your travels this winter season, don't forget to pick up your issue of Monocle's winter newspaper, Monocle Alpino. We get cold weather combat training from Japan's elite snow patrols. We look at how Iceland has picked itself up and dusted itself off after a nasty wipeout. And we find the comfortable alpine retreats that will have you packing your bags and heading for the hills. Plus, we look at winter warming fashion ideas with all of the trimmings, including Bavarian Lederhosen. That's all in the current issue of Monocle Alpino. Prost und zum Wohl!
Join our team of editors and their special guests every day from New Year's Eve as they usher in 2013. From Sao Paulo to Singapore and from Abu Dhabi to Atlanta, we'll be gazing into our crystal ball to see what the fresh new year holds in store for your sector. So make your New Year's resolution to kick off 2013 with our editor's look aheads. Every weekday at 7 a.m. right here on Monocle 24.
And welcome back to The Review. We are live in St. Moritz. It's just 9:39 in Tokyo. It's 13:39 here in St. Moritz. It's 7:39. Good morning. Happy Saturday morning if you are listening in Toronto.
Now, keeping our focus on the art world, we turn now to the festival bringing the artists to the community of St. Moritz. The managing director of the St. Moritz Art Masters, whose focus this coming year is on China, Evelyn Fassett-Tester, joins us now. Welcome to the show, Evelyn.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, first we could start with the idea of China, an exciting theme for this year's Art Masters. Why did you choose China?
Actually, we have every year
focus on a country. So this year we had Brazil, and it's always good to bring young artists from a different culture, from a completely different environment to the Engadine. And they enjoy the nature, they enjoy the Engadine. And so we are looking forward to China. China is one of the most interesting art environments, industries at the moment. So we are really looking forward to have these exhibitions.
I mean, for someone who would just be tuning in now, they would say that maybe it's sort of not unlike the cover of this Ausstieg Neue Mächte, that you're only going for the BRIC countries, that it's, you know, Brazil and then China. Is that just by coincidence, or in a market like this, do you want to make sure that you have sure bets that people sort of see as recognizable?
I mean, it's not only for the art, it's also a bit a cooperation with the tourist environment. So for Switzerland tourism and also for the Engadine, Brazil is a very important emerging market. China is very important. So for us, it was the perfect link to use these markets.
So can you tell us how Samaritz Art Masters actually works? I mean, we're talking about this interesting exchange, almost a kind of you know, these young artists descending on the Engadine and drawing inspiration from it. Can you give us a picture of sort of what this town looks like when you're in full flight?
I mean, when we're in full flight, we're for 10 days. We just have about 30 exhibitions throughout the valley. We have about 20 just in St. Moritz, which can be, you can just walk through the pedestrian zone, you see sculptures, you see installations, or you go to a church, you have an installation there, or you see, we had this year, we had with the famous Hamish Fulton, which is a British artist. We had a slow walk in the parking area. So it's really, you experience it, and the idea is that you can experience it at unusual settings, because we don't have, you know, like a big hall where we can just exhibit everything. So we have to look for spaces, and this is the interesting part for every artist, that they come here and then they can find a way how to show their work and experience it.
I mean, you raised an interesting point earlier about this relationship that also Samaritz and the Engadine has with emerging markets for tourism as well, because, you know, I would probably say, you know, a lot of other centers around the world, they don't really have to worry about the tourism. They worry about the receipts, you know, how many people come to actually buy art. So is that a tricky balance for you to sort of, on one side, make sure that what the artists and the galleries that you're inviting, that the lineup is in a way commercial enough to attract a broader audience, the tourists, let's say, as much as then those who are, you know, collectors and curators?
It's very funny that you ask. I mean, for us, for St. Moritz Art Masters, we are a non-commercial fair. And this is also the interesting part for all the artists. We have about 30 artists that are coming every year because it's non-commercial. Of course, if a gallery is exhibiting here, for them it's commercial. But again, they can show it to a different target group, which they don't attract.
But it's not leading commercially, is what you're saying?
No, it's not. It's not, exactly. It's really, and it's also to find new or young artists, or give them a space to show it, and then combine it and have a platform, a networking platform for everybody.
I wondered, I mean, we mentioned before with our previous guests about the sort of heritage here, the Giacomettis and Max Ernst and the Surrealists sort of hanging out in the Engadine and being inspired by the landscape. What's the feedback from, you know, the Brazilians when they were here? Did you see any sort of notable influence on their work?
It's really amazing when they come here the first time, when they arrive here, then they're just speechless. I mean, they see the lake, they see the mountains, and then they just have a lot of new ideas, and it's very positive, and that's why we also see why they like to come here, why they want to spend time here. So it's very positive. And the influence from what you just mentioned, Giacometti, Nietzsche, they know this influence, and they also somehow they try to follow this path and continue with it.
Let's go back to the China focus and what people can expect. I know you probably don't want to give away any surprises, but what type of transformation can we expect to see?
At the moment, I really can't give you any ideas, because we are really in the planning face, so I can't give you the details. We are planning to have about 8 to 10 Chinese artists exhibiting here. We will have one photo exhibition with a really interesting Chinese photojournalist. And we already start this year in February with the launch of one exhibition in the church. So we'll have a winter exhibition just with one artist. It's a Chinese artist, and he's going to exhibit white landscapes. His name is, I'm not very literate in Chinese, so I try to say it. It's Kui Shihua, and so we'll have this, we start already. So this I can say in summer, we'll know more in May.
And in terms of your focus on China and sourcing these young artists, I mean, have you been in sort of a cultural exchange, as it were, with the Engadine, and how have you sourced your sort of artists really from China?
We are at the moment in the process of sourcing it, so our art curator is talking to a lot of people, and I'm very positive that we will have a good choice and show very interesting installations and pieces.
Excellent. We are probably going to have to leave it there, but we're wishing you best of luck. Just remind everyone the dates that this runs till.
The St. Moritz Art Master 2013 will be August 23rd to September 1st here in the Engadine, and I hope to see you all here.
Evelyn Fassett-Tester, Director of St. Moritz Art Masters, thank you very much for joining us here on Monocle 24.
Thank you.
If you're looking for a present for a special person in your life, why not give the gift of a Monocle subscription? £80 a year brings you 10 copies of Monocle magazine straight to your door. Or for just £10 more, you get our large format winter and summer newspapers, Alpino and Mediterranean. Both subscriptions come with 12 months exclusive access to the online archive, include delivery anywhere in the world, and our stylish Rutote tote bag. Also, subscribers have advantage of a 10% discount off everything in one of our 5 Monocle shops, from London to Hong Kong. So head to monocle.com to pick up your subscription today.
And you're listening to The Review here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Brûlé, and Sophie Grove. Wonderful having that sort of little tour around the Spruithmager's galleries of Berlin and London, and then I think you're talking about the artists that they work with, of course, Fischli Weiss, you know, Thomas de Man being up here as well. It almost sort of makes you want to then go and commission maybe, you know, Andy Kuchel or maybe Mr. Ruch, who we had on the other day, and they could build us a little art compound for ourselves up here.
They could. I could imagine a sort of brutalist art bunker, maybe.
Yeah.
Sort of, you know, subterranean even. I think Kuchel could be up to that. But it was amazing to hear from Filomena sort of like this idea of skipping around the Engadine and finding Max Ernst sort of
in a babbling brook, which is quite something.
I just can't even
imagine. You're
going to get your pickaxe now. Yeah, it's a sort of like the kind of artist's dream. I can't imagine that happening now. But it's wonderful to draw them on sort of the London scene, which is something of a mystery to most people, but that kind of pivot of Gallerist to Mayfair, where they've been for so many years, in fact.
Well, one thing we've heard a lot, about the visual arts, we've heard a lot about design, we've heard a lot about architecture, but I think now for the last few days, I think I've spotted a slight gap in the market that maybe there's room for, I thought, a great documentary festival. I mean, a really, really brilliant, you know, just to use the wonderful Scala Cinema here, have, you know, just, I think, you know, perhaps some of the best filmmakers and directors come up here, have a bit of a political discourse around it, and have a themed season. I think it'd be quite nice.
I could see you hosting some of those discussions, Tyler.
In this very square, maybe.
Actually, it'd be amazing to do some sort of outside screenings in the sort of wonderful landscape. It could be, in fact, let's get some ideas cooking.
I've always sort of thought, you know, just, you know, you go to Davos the other side, and of course, you know, very soon in the coming weeks, you know, really Davos will suck all of the energy out of these valleys, and all eyes will be on the World Economic Forum. But I've always thought that there should be a bit of an anti-Davos over here. I mean, not something even at the same time, different time of year, maybe in the summertime as well. But to have a bit of an interesting summit of great minds could be quite interesting, and not competing with our friends from Lenzerheide either.
I love that. It's almost anarchic thought, the anti-Davos.
But yeah, no, exactly. But I'm not talking about, you know, lots of dreads and bobble hats and things like that.
You're not talking about Occupy Davos.
No, definitely not.
I thought not.
No, anyway, that is a strong possibility. Okay, so we have our marching orders this afternoon. We have to commission architects. We have to program a conference, but definitely stay tuned for that. You're listening to The Review. When we come back in a moment, we are going to have... We'll continue a bit of our romance theme, which has been carrying on for the past few days. You're listening to The Review. Stay with us.
Vanuit London. Dit is Monocle 24.
London으로부터 Monocle 24입니다.
De Londres. Essa é a Monocle 24.
Oi, London. This is Monocle 24.
Ot London, tu vai Monocle 24.
Fra London, dette Monocle 24.
From London, this is Londres.
Hollanda.
London, Europe.
Hong Kong.
Hong Kong.
Zurich.
London.
This is Monocle 24.
And welcome back to The Review here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Berlin. So if you go, I'm not quite sure where the last 51 minutes have gone, but we're almost at the end of the program, which is rather remarkable.
Now, throughout the week, as we just said, we've been speaking to several guests broadcasting and writing in Romansh, the fourth official language of Switzerland. And now it's time to welcome an artist working in the ancient language. Retzia Peer is a singer and songwriter who has brought the Romansh musical tradition into the 21st century. Retzia, a warm welcome to Monocle 24's stage here outside the humming Hauser Hotel. Tell us, what is it like working in Romansh? Is it an expressive language to compose and lyrics with and express sort of all of these ideas that you're using in your songs?
Hello, by the way.
Hello.
For me, it's... I hope you understand me. My English is not perfect. For me, the Romansh, my language, my maternal, it's my home language. So it's an evidence for me to compose and write lyrics in Romansh because I have this connection, this direct connection to the music, and I feel more authentic. And for me, it's really important to keep this because I think everyone can go away with their own culture, and I found it through the music and through my songs. But yeah.
Is there a lot of competition in the Romansh world? Because, you know, I think, yeah, because you laugh about it, because I think that it is such a niche, it is such a small language,
yeah.
it forms such a small part of the total spoken culture in this country. Mm-hmm. But yet at the same time, I can think of people like Michael van der Heide and...
Yes.
You know, that's one artist who, you know, actually I went and bought several of his CDs, and I can remember him from about sort of, you know, 10 years ago. So, you know, within your community, are there a lot of people trying to break through in Romansh, would you say? Or do you have it quite easy?
sadly, not so many people try to do it. Maybe it's because we're not so many. But I don't think this is the reason to say I have it easy. Not at all. It's even more difficult to try to create and do something beautiful and with a high quality if you are doing something in a minority language, because not so many people are going to understand you, and you don't have such a huge culture as Brazil, for example. They speak a Latin language and they can go with their music all around the world. It's like it's difficult.
I mean, we were talking about composing in Romansh, but I wondered if you could give us an insight into the musical tradition in your community. Do you have a style? Is there an instrument that is very sort of traditional in Romansh communities?
I grew up with traditional music, for sure, and this is what's my base. It's always, how do you say, it's always walking with me, but... Since little, I had this feeling, because we're quite far away from everything. You see, we're in the mountains, it's really closed. And I had always this feeling to go away and have some other influences and being open for other things, other music styles, other directions. And I think I use my traditional music as the base, as something nobody can take it away. But it isn't the only thing I can have.
But is it central to the community in the Romanche, social life, for instance? Do you sit around and sing folk songs? Are there any particular narratives that are sort of very traditional Romanche folk songs, for instance?
There are some, and we did it. When I was younger, we did it. Well, young people sit around on a table and we sing traditional songs. Se fis na randolina, e se sabes volar, su corda macharina, e se yantam splachar, and so. So this is, for example, a traditional song. But it's, in a way it's sad, in a way it's normal. Our culture is growing and going somewhere else, and we're not doing it so much anymore. And yeah, but
I just wanted to ask, what type of support for the arts, and particularly for singers, are offered by the Romanche community, or via Bern or via Chur? How does one ensure that, even aside from, of course, Radio Romanche, yes, but that also that there's airplay and that you can go on to, you can walk into Migros and buy Romanche CDs? What type of support do you have?
The support is immense. It's huge. And I appreciate it. And maybe we speak from a different support. Maybe I should. But when we speak about having help, receiving help, financial help and publicity, in our place in Engiadina, it's really, the support is really big. But if you go farther, for example, in the German part and everywhere, then you are in a, if you want to go farther than Switzerland, it's gonna be difficult, because the you should find something that catches people also over the borders,
Well, Redzia, thank you so much for joining us today, and that brings us to the end of our Saturday review. For now, it's time for us all to say goodbye here in St. Moritz. Our show today was produced by Alad John, and our engineer was Jack Phillips.
And Redzia is going to stick around. She's going to at least sing us out for a minute or so. We're going to be handing back over to London to our Georgina Godwin with a weekend edition next. Of course, news headlines are going to be here in a few minutes as well. And of course, we'll have the best of the weekend or Monocle 24 stories as well, which will be on the curator. And don't forget me, Sophie Grove, Andrew Tuck, Marcus Hippie, and all of our crew. We're back, of course, with The Briefing and also with Midori House, both Monday and Tuesday, right here in St. Moritz. But here to sing us out very, very briefly is Redzia Pier one more time. Have a very good weekend. Goodbye.
Din jonda derives tu tristets in mai, tristets in mai. Din jonda derives tu evet etai, evet etai, evet larmas chikula ein tisu, ein tisu, oh.